My friends, not only is the early church replete with examples of devotion and honor of Our Lady as the Theotokos, references to the implicit belief in her Immaculate Conception, but also by the end of the middle aspect of the first millennium, by about 400 to 500, all the way through 1000, you have a clear, unbroken teaching regarding Our Lady's role in your redemption and in mine. Hello and welcome to Marycast. This is Dr. Mark Miravalli, Professor of Theology and Mariology at the Franciscan University of Steubenville. I think you're going to be amazed at how explicit the teachings of the early church, starting with the understanding of Our Lady as the new Eve and continuing through the 5th, 6th, and 7th centuries all the way to the end of the first millennium, are concerning her unique role in the redemption. It's interesting, sometimes on modern radio shows, people will say co-redemptrix or Mary Shedder and the redemption, as if this is something new. This is something ancient. It's an ancient Catholic teaching. And remember, for the first 1500 years, there's only the Catholic Church. That's what church is, along with our Orthodox brethren, of which we're in a series of separation from 1054 onward. But that's what there is. And both in East and West, you have this beautiful accolade to the role of our Blessed Mother. Let me give you just some of the highlights of the teaching from about 500 AD to 1000 AD regarding Our Lady's role in the redemption. As I mentioned, it starts with an understanding of Mary as the new Eve. Then you have liturgical expressions, which are phenomenal. There are masses, Egyptian, Coptic, Masorabic, Ethiopian, Armenian liturgies, which call Mary the Salvatrix and the Liberatrix. That's 5th century AD. So already in the liturgy, these terms are kind of codified liturgically, that Mary uniquely participates in our salvation and in our liberation. Even in the Eastern Akathist hymn, which is written somewhere around 525, they refer to the Mother of God as, quote, the redemption. Hail, redemption of the tears of Eve. As we move on, we have the Latin poet Saint Fortunatus, who dies around 600, who talks about Mary's role in salvation in this poem. He says, quote, O remarkable Virgin, our only remedy, whom God filled with the wealth of the world, you merited to hold your Maker in your womb and give birth to God, conceiving in faith. By this new birth, you will wash the world from sin. So, in art, in architecture, in theology, in homily, in poetry, the truth of Our Lady's role in the redemption is there. We also see this very strongly, once again, with the Eastern Fathers we talked about in the earlier program, St. John Damascene, St. Andrew of Crete, St. Germain of Constantinople. St. Andrew of Crete, who is the Archbishop of Crete and the renowned orator, says of Our Lady, quote, in you we have been redeemed from corruption. All of us have obtained salvation through her. 8th century, my friends, the truth about Mary's co-redemption. We also have further expressions of this by Alcuin, the great French abbot, who says, quote, the whole world rejoices that it has been redeemed through you, a reference to Our Lady. Once again, you cannot rewrite history. This is the truth about Our Lady's unique role in redemption. Now, it's true that Mary will be called Redemptrix first around the 10th century, but that's a title which captures the role. The role is here and continues to be here. Well, a great breakthrough in terms of articulation of this comes with the Byzantine monk John the Geometer. And notice, my friends, how many Eastern references there are to Our Lady's Immaculate Conception, her role as Mother of God, and also her unique role in the redemption. John the Geometer, I'm going to read to you a quote from John Paul II about the contribution of John the Geometer, who so clearly makes reference to Mary's unique and irreplaceable role in the redemption as early as the 10th century. These are the words of John Paul II, quote, this doctrine of Mary's collaboration in redemption was systematically worked out for the first time at the end of the 10th century in the life of Mary by the Byzantine monk John the Geometer. Here, Mary is united to Christ in the whole work of redemption. sharing according to God's plan in the cross and suffering for our salvation. She remained united to the Son in every, quote, deed, attitude, and wish. United to the Son in every deed, attitude, and wish. Now, this is from John the Geometer himself, who talks about this union of Jesus and Mary in the work of salvation. He says, quote, "The Virgin, after giving birth to her Son, was never separated from him in his activity, his dispositions, his will. When he went away, she went with him. When he worked miracles, it was as if she worked them with him, sharing his glory and rejoicing with him. When he was betrayed, arrested, judged, when he suffered, not only was she everywhere present beside him and even realized especially then his presence, but she even suffered with him. Terribly sundered, she would have wished 1,000 times to suffer the evils she saw her Son suffering." John the Geometer goes on to say, and this is really a keynote of Marian theology, he says, quote, "We give thanks for having suffered for us," this is to Our Lady, "for having suffered for us such great evils, and for having willed that your mother," excuse me, to Jesus, "that your mother should suffer such great evils for you and for us." John the Geometer summarizes by saying that Mary was inseparable to the sufferings of Jesus, not only at the beginnings, but at the cross. Well, when you say that, my friends, when you say that they're inseparable, you're talking about a joint suffering, a suffering of a Redeemer, a divine and human Redeemer, and a human immaculate co-redeemer, which was Our Lady. Now, it's also true that the term Redemptrix makes its first appearance in the 10th century. So, over 1,000 years ago, you had the doctrine of Mary's suffering with Jesus at Calvary. Not just Mary's yes, which gives us Jesus at the Annunciation, as foundational as that is, but Mary's suffering with Jesus at Calvary. You have that by the end of the 10th century. You also have the term which signifies, which codifies, which summarizes that, the Redemptrix term. You have that found in a Psalter in the 10th century. And let's look at what the term means. To call Mary Redemptrix, which they did in the 10th century, is to say that Mary was the female that participates with Christ the Redeemer. The Latin suffix trix, T-R-I-X, makes reference to a female. So, in fact, in the Litany of Saints, where this term is found, it is Sancta Redemptrix ora pro nobis, meaning Holy Redemptrix, pray for us. Now notice, my friends, the sharp difference between the Litany to the Sacred Heart of Jesus, where you would say, Heart of Jesus, miserere nobis, cor Jesu, miserere nobis, versus Sancta Redemptrix ora pro nobis. What's the difference? Well, you're asking Jesus to have mercy on us because he's the divine and human Redeemer. You're asking Mary as Redemptrix to pray for us. And we're going to see that people like St. Catherine of Siena called Mary the Redemptrix of the human race without any concept that she was in competition with Jesus Christ. Let's do it the St. Maximin Kolbe way. Let's do it the St. Louis Marie de Montfort way. Let's do it the St. Bernard Clairvaux way. Let's speak the truth about Our Lady without compromise. Because you know what? It'll make Jesus happy, because that is her role. And the sooner we acknowledge the role of Mary as co-redemptrix, the sooner we will receive the fullness of graces from that role, from the co-redemptrix, mediatrix, and advocate, bringing us nothing short of the triumph of the Immaculate Heart of Mary and an era of peace. Thanks for being with us at MaryCast. This is Dr. Mark Miravalle saying thank you and God bless.